Legends of Wasteland City is a post-apocalyptic anthology series and may contain references to drugs, sex, and violence, along with the occasional vulgarity. You've been warned. The Ones Who Came Before, Chapter 10. Zin grabbed as many MREs as she could stuff in her pockets and filled a canteen from the sink in the bunk room that had been her home for the past few days. She walked out of the radio building and made a beeline toward the supply tent that hid the rear exit to camp. The Swede and Casper were still in the courtyard, readying the mortar for another round of fire if it was needed.
Hey, where are you going?
I'm leaving.
No, that's not a good idea.
I'm not gonna have anyone else's blood on my hands.
Casper looked at Swede, who stared back.
I'll go after her.
Casper did his best to catch up as Zin disappeared behind the flap of the supply tent. Just then, Blue walked up to the Swede looking for Zin.
Where'd she go?
The Swede pointed toward the supply tent. Blue raced back toward the front of camp just in time to see the war chief, along with a dozen other dukes, taking off toward the freeway in a trio of well-armored buggies.
She's gone.
Hotshot and the remaining dukes stopped to look at her.
Out the back way.
Oh no.
Casper ran through the supply tent and a few steps into the cave that led out to the armored back door. He couldn't see anything as his eyes adjusted, but yelled out just in case she was there.
Zin, wait!
He heard the explosion and felt a rush of air and dust smack him in the face, almost knocking him over. He took a couple steps further in, holding out his hands, trying to feel his way.
Zin!
He strained to hear anything in the dark, hoping to hear her voice. But instead, he heard the war cry of dozens of bloodbacks. The explosion was heard throughout the camp, and the nearby dukes turned to see what was happening as Casper ran out of the supply tent as fast as he could. It went quiet for a second, but then dozens of bloodbacks poured into camp from the supply tent, shooting at everything, left and right. Casper made it into the radio building with Swede close behind, who closed the door. But several dukes on the new front lines fell to the onslaught of unexpected bloodbacks who had the element of surprise. The dukes that were still at their posts at the front of camp turned around, quickly realizing they didn't have cover from the rear. Some tried to get off shots before finding new cover on the other side of their sandbag walls. Bloodbacks behind those with guns carried torches and threw them on the old military tents, which quickly engulfed in fire. It was pure chaos as fighters fell on both sides. The bloodbacks spread out quickly, and within moments several of them pushed forward as others claimed covered positions in the back of the Duke's camp. Hotshot ran to a new position near one of the 50 caliber guns, which unfortunately couldn't be easily turned around, and readied herself for this new turn of events. Mutt and Blue crouched down next to her, and Stray, Cockpit, and I all took cover behind the other 50 cal, weaponless. After a moment, the three of us crossed the open ground between the turrets to join the rest of the group with Hotshot.
We're gonna move up the left side. This is gonna suck. Let's go.
Hotshot led the five of us, cover to cover, toward the armory on the left side of camp. Out on the Needles Freeway, Grim stood on the back of the lead buggy, being driven by Mongo. On his sides, the other two buggies carried Bacon, Hardass, Jackhammer, and several of the other MPs and enlisted dukes. He could just see the dirt bike carrying Zealot drive over a hill in the distance, slowed by a flat rear tire. He heard the faint sound of gunfire over the rumblings of the straight pipe exhausts of the three buggies.
Where is that coming from?
Mongo pulled to a stop and the other buggies did the same. He craned his neck back around while the others looked in either direction on the Needles Freeway.
Behind us, sir. That's at the base.
Grim turned to see smoke coming from the Duke's camp, and now clearly heard the fighting.
Not the trap I was expecting. Hardass, Jackhammer, go back and help them out. We're gonna stay on the leader.
Mongo punched the gas pedal, and the wheel of their buggy spun as they fishtailed trying to catch up with Zealot. The other two buggies turned around and raced back toward the camp. Mutt fired from the cover of a sandbag wall. We'd made it to the armory where Bullet, Big Spoon, Vash, and Grin were staging a defensive position. From there, we could see a few bodies toward the rear of the camp, dukes and bloodbacks alike. but the smoke from all the fires was too thick to see just how bad things were. Those of us that were still unarmed grabbed weapons from the stores in the armory as Hotshot tried her best to spot any other Dukes still alive. After a few seconds, she turned back to us.
Dukes! Hold your positions! They're not taking this fucking camp today!
Hotshot looked up and could see Valhalla trying to get her attention from her sniping position. Valhalla used hand signals to relay that about 25 Bloodbacks were setting up positions of their own in the back of camp. She then went back to firing down on whatever she could see. Hotshot looked back at us as we all waited on orders for our next move. We heard footsteps approaching us from the front walls and readied our weapons back where we had just come from. But it was Bacon and Hardass, along with three other MPs, who all joined up with our squad.
Ugh, thank the ones. Got heavy losses, 20 to 30 Bloodbacks in the camp.
Bacon looked around, completely unfazed by the chaos.
We've got Jackhammer and the other MPs on the east side of camp. We should all push up together.
Okay, I'll take the middle. Makeshift, Stray, Cockpit, Blue, you're with me. MPs, up the left. Bullet, Spoon, Bash, Grin. You got the armory. If they get past us, blow it.
In the rear of the armory room, Hotshot spotted her wife, Mouse, putting on a flak jacket. Relief poured over her knowing that she was safe. She stepped through Bullet and Big Spoon to embrace her.
Mouse, I've got to fix this. There's nobody else.
Mouse knew Hotshot's position came with risks. She gave Hotshot a knowing look.
Go. I'll be okay.
Hotshot looked over to Bullet.
Bullet, I need you to...
We got her. Go.
Hotshot gave one last look to Mouse, surrounded by these more than capable guardians, and led the rest of us out of the armory opening. The three units pushed up, clearing each line of defense as we went. We made it halfway back through camp as the Bloodbacks hammered us with unending rounds of fire.
They found the second weapons cache! Take cover!
We crouched behind the last line of sandbags, on the opposite side from where Zin, Blue, and Mutt had first taken cover, taking shots when we could. The Bloodbacks fired from fully covered positions and seemed to have equal firing power with our weapons now in their hands. They weren't great shooters, but kept us pinned down with a steady stream of fire from all directions. Mutt saw the fires in the rear of camp and remembered the dog tied up in the med tent. He decided to cross camp and get him out of there, leaving our group without saying anything.
Mutt! God damn it, who trained that kid?
He ran alone, running from cover to cover across the canyon to the other side of camp. He saw Jackhammer and Hardass moving up on the right side, fell in with them for a few moments, and then broke off further right to get to the med tent. The far side of the medical tent was on fire, and smoke was billowing out from the entry flaps. Mutt ran inside, ducking under the thickest smoke, thinking the worst, but found the dog by his bed, distressed and tugging at his rope. Mutt scurried over to him and untied him from the side of the bed. He held the rope as they made their way back through the tent. Bullets tore holes through the dry tarps, letting in light that formed straight lines down through the smoke. Mutt ducked and held the dog until the volley stopped, then ran for the exit the first chance he got. They made it back out through the entry flaps and ran together across camp, somehow avoiding the flying bullets. Together they crossed to the other side and Mutt left the dog with the group guarding the armory, before running to catch up to Hotshot and the rest of us. We were still pinned down in the middle of camp behind the last row of sandbags, with the Bloodbacks starting to move up on our position. Anytime we'd try to get a shot off, they fired from all directions with a seemingly endless volley of bullets. For what seemed like an eternity, we couldn't get a round off, at least not any effective ones. Hotshot looked left and saw Bacon's group. They were taking less direct fire but couldn't seem to get an angle. And Jackhammer's group on the other side was pinned down as well. The Dukes had lost our advantage in this fight, and an all-out counter-offensive was going to take a huge toll on those of us remaining. Hotshot was looking around for something, anything that could give us the advantage again, but it was in vain. There was nothing. If only we could get to that bunker, she thought. She looked at Jackhammer, then over to Bacon, and the three squad leaders shared an understanding look. We would take back the camp at any cost. Hotshot took a breath, then stood from behind cover, firing wildly at the Bloodbacks as we all did the same. After a round of shots, we ducked down and reloaded. But as we readied for a second volley, we heard a sudden crackle of noise from the radio building speakers.
Well, it seems as if we have some special guests with us today here at Duke's Nukes, and the WCC would like to offer our most sincere welcome. This one goes out to all the Bloodbacks, every last one of you.
The radio blared a long-forgotten tune from before the fall, an early 80s rock song. It was so loud that everyone, Dukes and Bloodbacks alike, had to cover their ears, forcing both sides to stop firing momentarily. At the same time, the huge elephant doors to the bunker opened up. Behind the dust and smoke, it revealed the Duke's prized weapon, a Sherman tank, with Brother Justify standing up in the commander's hole, along with two of his followers crouched down behind him holding rifles. It clumsily rolled out of the bunker a few feet, its heavy wheels squealing from the weight and the 100 years of rust and dirt that had built up in the guide rails, clearing the massive doorway before the guns on the sides lit up, shooting at all the Bloodback positions from behind, and left and right the raiders were shot from the tank's many armored machine guns. The Bloodbacks turned and fired some rounds at the tank, which just ricocheted off the reinforced metal hull. Justify stood strong in his position, yelling down into the tank where the Bloodbacks were firing from, even as his two followers behind him were shot from their positions. We once again had the advantage as Hotshot and the rest of the Duke stood up and charged at the Bloodbacks, finishing off the ones around the radio building and the back wall. On the right, a handful of Bloodbacks tried to escape back out through the supply tent, but Jackhammer and his crew stopped them in their tracks. The runners all surrendered without hesitation, dropping their guns as the MPs surrounded them. With all the Bloodbacks dead, dying, or captured, the battle was won. The radio stopped playing the music, and both the Swede and Casper came out of the door of the radio building. Casper already had his notepad and started writing feverishly on it, even through the wails of dying Bloodbacks. Hotshot knew there wasn't a moment to lose.
Get those fires under control! Bacon, get the MPs back into position! There could be more of them!
She looked over to where Brother Justify was climbing down out of the tank.
Brother Justify. Never thought I'd see the day. Fight with faith, huh?
The great Holy Adam spoke to me. It just may have been through the Swede and this here walkie-talkie.
He threw the walkie back to the Swede.
I mean, why have a tank if you're not going to use it?
Hotshot looked past Justify at the two followers slumped on the back of the tank.
I'm sorry for your lost followers.
Oh, they're in the great by and by now. Showered in the great Adam's glow.
The enlisted Dukes spread out to save what they could from the burning tents, while some of the MPs resecured the front of camp. Vash quickly went around triaging the Duke's casualties. The losses were high, but nothing compared to the number of dead and dying Bloodbacks. If the Dukes didn't have so many injuries, he might have tried to help some of the raiders, but not today. He had his hands full. Instead, those of us that had been imprisoned by the Bloodbacks took it upon ourselves to help put them out of their misery.
No, please!
War Chief Grimm walked through the still black smoke into camp, followed by Mongo, who had a rifle trained on the back of Zealot's head, whose hands were squarely tied in front of him. Zealot looked up at the Sherman tank parked in the rear of camp as Brother Justify and his three remaining followers lowered the two dead from the back of the tank.
Well, ain't that just a thing of beauty? I didn't know you had an iron horse. You know, Grimm, you and I could have made a great team.
You're going to pay for all the death you've brought here.
I brought here? You and I were on good terms, until your man stole that girl from me.
Hotshot grabbed her pistol and raised it to Zealot's head.
Oh, let me shoot him now.
And bury these raider bodies ourselves?
War Chief Grimm gestured over to the other Bloodbacks, who were now kneeling with their hands on the back of their heads, as Hardass and another MP guarded them in front of the supply tent.
Nah, let him and his men dig. Then we'll figure out what's next.
Actually, I was hoping maybe we could make a trade.
The Dukes hadn't yet had the chance to clear the rear tunnel in all the confusion. Bio walked out from the supply tent with his arm around Zin's neck and a small pistol to her head. She looked like she'd been through hell, covered in dark soot with fresh blood streaming down her face. Hardass and his other MP had to swing around to keep the prisoners and Bile in front of them. Zealot smiled that darkly charming grin. Hotshot, Bacon, and Mongo kept their guns pointed at Zealot as Grimm stepped forward to negotiate.
And what did you have in mind?
The girl for Zealot. You can keep the others.
The other Bloodback prisoners looked up in disbelief.
And if I say no?
Then we all die.
Bile switched his gun to the hand around Zin's neck, holding her in front of him while he grabbed a grenade from his pocket. He pulled the pin with his teeth and held on to the handle. Hotshot couldn't stand the idea of giving Zealot up after all that had happened. There had to be another way.
Don't do it.
Mutt stepped forward.
What are you talking about? He'll kill her.
Stand down, Mutt.
Hotshot teased the trigger as she stepped closer to Zealot and spoke to Grimm.
They've killed a dozen of her people. We can't just let him walk away.
No. That's enough blood for today.
Grimm leaned in closer to Hotshot.
Don't worry. We'll get him later.
Then he turned and spoke directly to Zealot.
If I let you walk out of here, I don't ever want to see you again. Not here. Not Barstown. Not Wasteland City.
Oh, that's fine. I was just headed south anyway.
Let him go.
Hotshot, Bacon, and Mongo lowered their weapons.
Now why don't you put the pin back in that grenade?
I think I'll hold on to it. I'm letting her go now.
Bile released his grip on Zin, and she and Zealot began walking towards each other. Zin stared straight into the eyes of this disgusting raider that had murdered her whole tribe. She wanted him to know that he hadn't won, that she'd still be coming for him. Zealot spoke to her as they approached.
Well, looks like you somehow managed to avoid the fight again, didn't you, girl? Do you always run as your tribe is slaughtered? Bet you're wishing you got me that first time now, aren't you?
I'll find you. Wherever you go, it doesn't matter how long it takes. You're gonna die.
They were now stopped face to face as Zealot looked down at her. He snarled a not-so-charming smile, revealing a mouthful of dark, rotted teeth.
Well, let's just get this over with, shall we?
Zealot charged and jumped on her, pinning her down with his still-tied hands around her neck, choking her. She tried her best to struggle out of it, but he was just too big for her to fight off. Bio went to throw the grenade over the fighting pair at the Dukes.
Look out!
Mutt got off a shot, hitting Bio in the chest. The grenade fell just a few feet in front of him and right behind the group of Bloodback prisoners. Hardass and the other MP jumped out of the way of the grenade just in time. It exploded, taking out the line of prisoners and Bile as he fell to his knees from the gunshot wound. The explosion sent dirt and shrapnel flying towards Zealot, who raised his arms to cover his face. Zin's arms were freed up and she was able to reach down to her boot and grab the small rusty knife. Zealot wiped blood and dust from his eyes, looking down at her just in time to see Zin jab the knife straight into his chest. Rage filled his eyes as he put his full weight back down onto her neck. Zin felt the life leaving her as Mutt ran up and swung the butt of his rifle at Zealot's head. He fell to his side and Mutt pulled Zin away from him before helping her to her feet. They took a couple steps back and looked down as Zealot coughed blood.
This doesn't change anything, girl. You're still alone. You have no family.
Mutt looked at Zin, who was shaking and had tears swelling in her eyes. He grabbed her hand.
She's not alone.
We're her family.
Zin looked up at the Dukes. They all nodded at her, even with the sad eyes of today's losses. Casper, Grin, Blue, the War Chief, all of them. With shaky hands, Zealot pulled the knife out of his lung. He recognized it as the knife Zin first tried to kill him with, and the one that he used to finish Jonesy off, but lost the strength to hold it as blood poured from the open wound. The knife fell to the dirt beside him, blade first, sticking up out of the ground. War Chief Grimm walked over and grabbed the knife from next to Zealot, who was taking his last breaths. Grimm wiped the blood from the knife and handed it back to Zin, motioning back to Zealot.
Nice kill.
Mutt, Hotshot, and the other nearby Dukes all walked over to Zin's side,
but you were about to give me up.
Oh, that. No, we were just stalling.
Once a duke, always a duke. That is, unless you're still planning on heading north.
We could still use some extra hands to get this camp back in order.
What do you say? Stick around for a while?
Well, maybe, but I've got some opinions about who you... we sell guns to.
After today, so do I.
They all looked around at the half-destroyed camp and their fallen comrades. More dukes made their way back to the circle of survivors.
All right, you soft-bellied degenerates. Let's get this camp back in order. Medics, get a temporary tent set up for the wounded. MPs, graves dug for the dead. And FNGs, let's get a count on how much merchandise we use today. Let's move it, Dukes!
It was almost a month before things got back to normal. Zin did stick around, and Mutt did get several weeks of latrine duty for disobeying so many orders, which Zin enthusiastically volunteered to help him with. The Dukes had lost 13 of their tribe, which were each given a marker of a helmet on a standing rifle in the back corner of camp. But they had killed 82 of the Bloodbacks, including 5 Bulwarks. And, oddly enough, business grew with the Raiders out of the picture. Once word got around that the Dukes had taken out the most feared Raider clan in the area, everyone wanted to own a Duke's weapon. The Dead Raider Jerky Company sent a truck from Barstown to pick up the Bloodback carcasses. The Dukes weren't so keen on cannibalism, but there were some hungry people out there in Barstown, and who were they to judge? Plus, it saved having to bury them. It took 5 loads to get all the bodies transported out of there, and after Hotshot took out expenses, she gave the rest of the bounty to Zin. She figured Zin could use it for whatever she wanted, and knew that no amount could replace her family, but this was at least a start toward her new life. War Chief Grimm put all his attention to preparing for the next gathering of the tribes at Wasteland City, which always came in early fall. It was a peaceful gathering celebrating another year of survival. But the Dukes would do a majority of the year's bartering there and hand out bottle-cap calling cards for hireable services of protection and escorts. Grimm figured the Dukes were sure to have made some new enemies by eradicating such a powerful tribe as the Bloodbacks. He wondered how the infamous Skullduggers or the Rust Devils would react when they got word. Brother Justify let it be known that after the next gathering, he and his followers would stay in Wasteland City with the Swede and Casper, who decided to move their permanent post office to the growing crossroads city near the old Edwards Air Force Base. The Swede promised to somehow get a radio working for him out there. They would lose the protection of the Dukes, but Wasteland City was neutral ground, and a permanent treaty was in place for all survivors entering the town, guaranteed by their own army of elite guards. Mongo brought Mutt and Zin along with a few MPs and buggies to see if any of the cattle were still around the old Ludlow travel exit. And lo and behold, they did find a couple dozen heads scattered around. The dog, who everyone took to calling Trench after one of the fallen siblings, turned out to be a natural cattle dog and helped them drive the cows back to the Duke's camp, where Mongo and I were able to fashion some plumbing to get water out to them. They fed on the desert fields of bramble bush and dry grass, and Zin taught a few Dukes how to turn the little milk they provided into butter and cheese, to Casper's great delight. Mutt often thought about how lucky they were to have this camp, with its near limitless supply of food, water, power, and weapons. But surely they couldn't all last forever. One day they'd have to move on. But for now, he was thankful for everything they had. Especially that great Sherman tank. All left here by the ones who came before. The Ones Who Came Before was written by me, Mike Makeshift Darling. Narrated and directed by Makeshift. Zin was played by Mallory Trunnell. Mutt was played by Sean Cunningham. Zealot was played by Jay Preston. Brother Justify was played by Jet Black. Vash was played by Gavin Layton. Big Spoon was played by Paul Bellantoni. Casper was played by Ryan Lowes. The Fat Man was played by Mike the Baron Muchow. Bile was played by Kalen Chase. Hotshot, Blue, Bullet, Warchief Grimm, Mongo, Hardass, Bacon, Grin, The Swede, Valhalla, Wolf, Spurs, and Mouse all played themselves. And Mongo also played Butane. The Red Hawked Bloodback was played by Erica Blinn. The Dying Bloodback was played by Shepard. Makeshift and the Sleepy Bloodback were played by Makeshift. Sledge was played by Brett McCabe, who also helped with several voiceover recordings. Legends of Wasteland City is a production of The Apocalypse Post. You can help support Legends of Wasteland City and The Apocalypse Post by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/theapocalypsepost. Stick around after the break for more info about today's episode. The Wasteland Weekend 2022 event map is now fully funded thanks to you and your support. If you've missed out so far, it's not too late. You can still get in on the pre-sale at the Kickstarter, and if you're hearing about this for the first time and it's no longer 2022, there may be a couple for sale in the Apocalypse Outpost merch store. Both links are in the show notes. This map is a mosaic of over 100 drone photos of Wasteland Weekend 2022, stitched together and printed on either an 11x17 show poster or a full 20x40-inch movie poster, and fully labeled so you know where every street, ward, and tribe was for this epic in-person post-apocalyptic event. Get yours now. Did you know that the Dukes of the Nuke get a little cheeky when the sun goes down? Well, it's true. As a matter of fact, the Dukes After Dark pinup calendar has been a direct hit, and we still have a few left. Find some of your favorite Dukes like Mongo, Blue, Valhalla, and me, Makeshift, with our positions exposed in explosive poses. These calendars count down to Wasteland Weekend 2023 and help the Dukes bring their awesome camp and sexy asses to Wasteland City. So get yours on sale now at the sexy price of $24.99, including shipping. Hello, survivors. Well, that's it for season one of Legends of Wasteland City. Though there will be a few smaller things happening in the off season. I'm talking to you, Gimli. Don't worry, it's still coming. You know what I'm talking about. And for those of you who are wondering what that means, just make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. By the numbers, we did 18 episodes this season, starring three Wasteland tribes, but involving so many others too. We had about 30 voice actors, some professional, some giving it a try for the first time. And altogether, this season was over 4 hours of story. With the ones who came before pushing the clock to 2 hours and 42 minutes, not including intros, outros, credits, or my after-show chats like this one I'm doing right now. which is pretty crazy if you think about it. I've never written a feature film before. Mostly just short films and a web series. Alpha Planet, if you want to see some of my early work that helped spawn my love of Wasteland Weekend and pushed me into creating so much other post-apocalypse stuff. But this story, The Ones Who Came Before, is actually longer than a typical feature film, which normally clock in around 90 minutes or 2 hours. So this is one of those director's cuts for sure. But it does make me wonder, like, could The Ones Who Came Before make a good feature film? I don't know. Maybe. I'd have to rewrite it. There's a lot, and, you know, I didn't follow all the rules, so there would be plenty of editing to do. But it is pretty cool to think about just that, you know, this small short story that started out as, like, a 2-page short film script that I never shot turned into this just epic, huge story with so many characters and so many such, like, beautiful landscapes. Well, I mean, they're only as beautiful as you guys imagine them, but for me, it's gorgeous. And if you ever drive the 40 from, like, Needles over to Barstow, that's where this entire story took place, and it is actually beautiful. I mean, it's also desolate. There's nothing there. Like, what there is for communities and, like, people actually living there, it's very stark overall, but it's absolutely gorgeous, so... If you ever get to ride that route, or even just drop in on Google Maps, I mean, you won't get the full feel because, I don't know, like Google Maps, especially desert scenes, always tend to just make it look a little, like, not as colorful and not as vibrant. I don't know. But yeah, it is absolutely gorgeous, and it's so fun. And there are, like, legitimately abandoned cities along that route. Not cities, like towns. You'll see a lot of abandoned houses and stuff. It's pretty wild. It's a tough place to live. So I'd love to give a shout out to everyone who helped make this season happen. And this all started with Doc and Digits of Schofield's Drifters. They put up their short lore stories that they would post online, basically to their Facebook page, that would help them to kind of carve out some storylines that they would actually be role-playing. Not like, it's role-play light. It's not like LARP, by the way. It's role-play light. but yeah, so they would have these scenes that they would be setting up, these storylines setting up for Wasteland Weekend, and they would basically write kind of like the teaser for what's going to happen, like setting all the chess pieces in place for all the things that they wanted to do at Wasteland, as well as, I think, just like coming up with their characters' backstories and that kind of thing. So they posted a few of these online, and I read a few, and I was like, oh man, these are so great. And I had wanted to try doing some kind of a fiction podcast, and I said, hey, I love this short story, do you mind if I play with it? And the further I got into it, I was like, oh shoot, I want to get voice actors to play these two characters. That was Jay and Megan, who played Doc and Digits in what are they called, Contingencies. And it was actually a totally different story. Like it wasn't Contingencies, it was another short. And we put together basically a test, and it all worked out. So thank you, Doc and Digits, for, you know, allowing me to experiment with your story and just see where this thing goes. And of course, Casey and Casey, both named Casey, two very different people from Rabbit Asylum, who sent in their tribe's origin lore, which kept the project going and, you know, gave me some time to write the ones who came before. But thank you guys for submitting your story and letting me kind of go nuts with it. And of course, all of the cast who volunteered their time and talents to making it happen. Honestly, the whole cast, they were so on board. Every time I was like, oh, I got a thing for you, can we do it? Or if I just showed up at like Kaylin's house or at Mallory's studio, and I was just like, hey, let's record this thing. Everyone was so on board the whole time and did a wonderful job. Jay and Megan, who are professional voiceover actors, you can look them up. It's The Booth of Us. Kind of like the both of us, but put that extra O in there, thebooth of us.com. They are a married couple who both do voiceover and both do acting and all sorts of stuff. And they've got big things coming this year. I'm really excited to see what they've got going on. But yeah, I think I've mentioned them before because they do a bunch of video game stuff too. And I know a lot of you guys like video games. So you've probably heard their voices before if you've played any game in the last like 5 years. I don't know. Also, Brett and Mallory, who played Sledge and Zin, they also helped with some of the voiceover recordings when I couldn't be in the room and did a great job of getting awesome audio for me to work with. Thank you guys so much, because not only did you act out a couple of roles, but you also helped me get other people's recordings as well. So I really appreciate that. And of course, thank you to all of my Patreon supporters whose monetary contributions have really helped me take the extra time needed for this show to make it as full and polished as possible. It does take a lot of time, and those contributions help me to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to take this day and just work on this. And it does take a long time. And I basically work freelance in the real world. So being able to say, you know, I'm not going to try to find other work today. Today, I'm just going to sit down and work on this really cool thing I want to do. It's such a big help. And my Patreon is still growing. It's up over 50 people now. Fine, wonderful, beautiful people who see the value in what we're doing with these shows and on the YouTube channel as well, because the Patreon kind of goes to support not just Legends of Wasteland City, but also the Apocalypse Postcast and the Apocalypse Post YouTube channel, where I do have some more videos coming, because we're taking a little break from the podcast and we're going to do some video stuff. I got a lot of stuff from Wasteland Weekend 2022 to get out there. Some pretty cool stuff. So yeah, make sure you're following along, and thank you for your support and making it all happen. And also, all my patrons have been wonderful, because every now and then I post up like, hey guys, I'm thinking about doing this thing. I just want to make sure that you feel good about supporting this new project. And everyone's always just been like, whatever you want to do, go for it. We love your work. And I so appreciate that. It is so amazing and inspiring. And just you guys having my back for all this time has been great. So thank you so much. So let's talk about this story. Like I said before, this story was originally going to end in a cliffhanger at the end of episode 9, when Zin leaves through the rear exit. That was going to be the end. And in that ending, I had her leave without the second wave of bloodbacks coming in. That was all kind of written to help wrap this up. But of course, Zealot did escape. You know, his bloodbacks did get wiped out at the front door, but he did escape. So, you know, there was going to be more Zealot. But That would have meant a season two where Mutt and the dog have to go find Zin, and the Dukes continue to have to deal with Zealot and the remaining bloodbacks. But leaving it there felt a little bit off to me, because once I started to work it out, I realized Zin had to be the one to kill Zealot. And by writing this last episode, I could wrap up the whole story in one more episode, one more electric, fiery, explosive episode with a false ending or two, and that's where it ended up. And I knew that, you know, if I didn't wrap this story up, it might be a season or two before we get back to it, because I also have some other stories that I want to write. So for season two, I've got some other things that I want to go explore, and I don't know if we would get back to Zin and Mutt and the rest of the Dukes for a little while. So I hope you guys are happy with this story kind of having a little bow on it, and everyone kind of living their best lives so that we can move on to some other stuff, because it is an anthology, right? And I do want to get some other stories from other Wasteland tribes and even beyond to include in season two. So anyway, that's where we're at. If you're listening to the Legends of Wasteland City feed that doesn't include the Apocalypse Postcast, make sure you check that out. It's simply called the Apocalypse Post on your favorite pod browser. On that channel, I do discussions, storytelling, and interviews about general post-apocalypse stuff. And of course, if you're listening on the Apocalypse Post, just know that from now on, Legends of Wasteland City are going to be on that channel only from now on. Just so I can kind of make sure that, you know, you know what you're expecting when you're on the shows. So just make sure you're subscribed to both. And basically, I'm going to go back and forth between the two. I'll do some Legends of Wasteland City, then go back and do the Apocalypse Post. And then, of course, sprinkle in YouTube in between all the things. So just make sure you're subscribed everywhere. That's the Apocalypse Postcast and Legends of Wasteland City, wherever you get your pods, and the Apocalypse Post on YouTube. All these links are going to be in the show notes, by the way. I don't know what else to talk about the story. I just hope you guys enjoyed it. You know, we got a lot of the Dukes involved. We got some dead Dukes. You might notice that other than Trench and Shithook, who got killed kind of early on in episode 9, other than those two, they didn't really have names, because, I don't know, it'd be weird to kind of like kill off some characters that actually exist in the real world. And I never named them earlier on or gave them any lines, so, you know, there's just, you know, some dead Dukes. Because the Dukes are basically, like, they're really based on real people. If you haven't heard yet, the Dukes of the Nuke are a tribe at Wasteland Weekend, which is this real-world festival that happens once a year in Southern California. And a lot of these characters are based on the characters that these real-world people have created. Which I think is a really cool thing, and everyone was very generous letting me take liberties as far as like giving them lines and giving them characterizations and kind of like painting them a little bit of my own brushstrokes, if you would, but very heavily based on their personas at the festival. And so, you know, I didn't want to kill anybody because they're very much alive. And so, you know, in a weird way, we did red shirts for the dead Dukes. You know, we kind of vaguely talk about FNGs, the fucking new guys, and you know, I imagine a bunch of them got killed, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing to think about killing off characters. Obviously, a lot of bloodbacks died. And the bloodbacks are not a real tribe at Wasteland Weekend. So Zealot and Bile and Sledge and the Fat Man and Sleepy Bloodback and Red Hawked Bloodback and Dying Bloodback, they're all just made up characters, so I could be a little bit wilder with their deaths. but yeah, it was actually really enjoyable to kill off characters, I gotta say. It's not like you feel powerful, you just feel like it's such a visceral thing when you're talking about a death of a character, and it's kind of fun to write, that's all. But guys, if you enjoyed these stories, there's a few ways you can help to make more happen. One would be to share the show with a friend, especially if they're into the post-apocalypse world or just really like audio dramas. Or, I mean, this one would be really good for teenagers. I wouldn't go too young just because there are a few swear words. But it's very PG-13, I would say. So, yeah, if you got someone that really likes audio dramas or audio books, share it with them. Second, you can join the Patreon and pledge any monetary dollar amount per upload. I think the lowest one's a dollar or two. All the way up. I mean, sky's the limit. If you want to jump in higher and be not just a Patreon, but like a true patron of the arts and like, you know, help make this uh, a a budgeted thing, that would be amazing. Seriously, your real world dollars do go a long way to making that happen, and I can't thank you guys enough that are already on the Patreon. Third, you can buy some merch from theapocalypsepost.square.site. Still haven't fixed that URL, and I don't know if I'm going to. It costs money to do that. I don't get enough sales. But you can take a little piece of the end of the world home to keep forever. Well, I mean, you don't take it home. I ship it to you. And I do ship everything by hand, pretty much. I do also have a Tee Public. That link is also in the show notes. There's a few t-shirts on there that have been designed by other Wastelanders, so you can check those out as well. What else? Finally, I'm always looking for writers and voice actors that are willing to share their talents, especially you Wastelanders who have some lore stuff written about your tribe and that kind of thing. If you want to hear your story here on the Apocalypse Post, there's really no minimum length, although I would say, you know, 1,000 words to like 2,000 words is kind of the money spot. But also if you have something that's longer than that, we'll do extra episodes. But, yeah, I think I do want to kind of concentrate on like shorter, one-offs, or maybe like 2 or 3 episode arcs, that kind of thing. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. It was a lot of fun to work on this like 10 episode epic for sure. But the whole time I'm like, what's next? Because, you know, I'm ready to get into another story and like change styles, or I'd love to do like a comedy or a romance, or I don't know, like an origin. We already did an origin story. I don't know. Just different styles and stuff. I'd love to, if you've got an idea, I'd love to hear it, basically. I do need some voice actors. I know several of you have volunteered. Ryan Lowe's, who plays Casper, he was just a listener who was enjoying the show and said, hey, if you ever need a voice, let me know. And I said, yes, please. And he did a great job. So good, in fact, that I sent him episode 8.1, which was basically Casper's radio show. And I was like, here, do this. And he was like, wow, this is a lot. I'm sorry if I overwhelmed you, Ryan, but thank you so much, because that episode's so fun, and it really did. It was kind of fun to kind of change the perspective and give a listen to the actual radio, and it was so fun, and you really crushed it. But yeah, if you're interested in being a part of the show, whether a writer, a voice actor, or if you want to be on the Apocalypse Post and do an interview, or if you've got a Wastelander story and that kind of thing, send a note to theapocpost@gmail.com and let's talk. And I know that there's some of you have done that already and are just waiting for me to say, hey, let's do this thing. Just send me a little reminder every now and then, because a lot of time passes in between things, and I am not the most organized person in the world, so just keep reminding me and we'll get it done. For those of you who are listening in real time, happy holidays. This episode's coming out just a few days before Christmas. I know it's Hanukkah season, as well as many other holidays. I actually just got wished a happy Lucia, which is a Swedish holiday, which is kind of fun. It's one I've never heard of. I actually had to look it up. And for those of you who don't know, Lucia, this is coming right from Google, I'll be honest. On the 13th of December, Sweden celebrates Lucia Day. This event symbolizes light in a dark winter, which, that's beautiful anyway. Celebrated annually in December, this historic custom is an atmospheric event. I'd love to know what that means. Involving Christmassy treats and a singing lineup of candle-carrying characters dressed mostly in white gowns. So it sounds like it's a lot of fun and definitely leading up to Christmas, which is fantastic. Oh, and there's a picture here. St. Lucy's Day is what it's also called. Lucy is called Santa or Sancta Lucia. She's a lady in a white dress symbolizing a baptismal role in a red... I don't know. Anyway, look it up. It's kind of fun. But there's a lot of stuff going on. And yeah, if you're listening in real time, happy holidays to whatever you celebrate. And if you're listening in the future, happy whatever's coming up next. It could be St. Patrick's Day, or 4th of July, or Cinco de Mayo, Revenge of the Sith, Revenge of the Fifth, I don't know. Anyway, I hope you're celebrating wherever you are, because I know I am getting this story done. Anyway, that's it for this time, survivors. I'll see you all in the new year. There probably won't be anything until then. So thanks for listening, and until then, stay alive. End days, end days, end days, end days, end days.